on your most recent edition of Off the Ball.
A bit of sanity has returned to the game. I think common sense has prevailed.
And this.
For me, there's been probably five standout players. Finn Russell, James Gibson Park, Dan Sheehan, and you know, the two boys that you mentioned there, the two back rowers in Curry and Burnett.
Catch up now on the Goal Out app.
Well, Barry Murphy's here with us now. Hey, Barry, you well?
Yeah, good morning.
This is great because both of you saw one each last night. So I was admittedly drawn towards Pats because of the scenario last night. But thankfully, you were on commentary for over, so you got to see it. Stephen Bradley was saying he wasn't overly happy with the performance. I guess the nature of this job was done last Thursday.
Exactly. You kind of feared that going into last night. 4-0 up away from home and really comprehensive performance as well. And going into last night, even St. Joseph's, they only brought 17 players over, kind of written the game off, kind of saved on expenses. Three of those were goalkeepers as well. So they kind of thought to themselves, listen, we save a few quid going into this game. But listen, Sean McCrory went over and did a really good job over there, 4-0 up from the first leg, and it's not that often European side or an Irish side in Europe can do that. Came home last night, gave a couple of young lads, Keane Barrett, Graham Barrett's son, a run out, Corey O'Sullivan in as well, mixed a few players around. So all in all, a good couple of weeks for Shamrock Rovers in Europe.
And look, I think it's understandable, half an eye probably in Derry at the weekend, so we had to wait and see what the other results were to confirm that game is actually going to take place on Sunday. But with the position Rovers are in now, after the draw between Bowes and Derry last week, like, they're in a very comfortable position. If they avoid defeat at the weekend, I won't say they're nailed on for the title, but it's another big step, isn't it?
Yeah, you're looking at that game last week with Derry and Bowes, and you're just begging one of them to go and win it. And you think when Derry went 1-0, they looked quite good in the game as well. You're thinking, go to Tala next week, 6 points between them, go and beat Rovers, put down a real mark, and you've got it to three. And suddenly Rovers don't have to do anything. It's kind of reverted to where it has been over the last couple of seasons, where Rovers have pulled ahead and nobody's really come in to chase and pack. And Derry last year, you thought we were going to put a bit of a run together, and obviously brought it to the last couple of weeks. But again, they're in that kind of building mode at the moment, and Tiernan Lynch's first season in charge, so you can kind of forgive him for that. He's brought in some good players in the window as well, so it'll be a good game on Sunday. I think Rovers will be happy enough it's going ahead. The way the fixtures have fell, got a couple of handy draws and the FAI Cup, and the way the game went, obviously, over in St. Joseph's, they could rest a few players last night, so all eyes on Sunday now.
Yeah, well, Keith, this brings up Stephen Bradley's comments straight away about the season and the structure of it. So it's not the first time he's mentioned this. There's been a few years kind of in the offing. And like, I can see some merit in this. And I saw some of the journalists have broken down that basically the League of Ireland season runs almost as long as the Championship with fewer games. Yeah. But part of the point is we condense a lot of the games just before the break for the European teams. And then it often feels like there's not as many fixtures for some of the teams when teams are in Europe. And then we finish the season reasonably abruptly at the end of it as well. I don't know if there's an argument maybe for stretching out the season a bit as opposed to making it longer, maybe stretching out where the games are.
Yeah, I think there is an argument there for that. But, you know, the likes of a Cork or people down the other end of the league will say, well, that's only to benefit a handful of teams at the top of the league. And one thing I always think that if you're a Shamrock Rovers or somebody who's done really well and get group stage football or go deep into European competitions, it's a reward to play this amount of games. It's not a punishment. Sometimes on your body it can feel like a punishment, but it's a reward because you're doing so well. So, yeah, look, it's not ideal that you've got to keep rolling into game to game, but realistically, Shamrock Rovers had that game done. You know, they could have easily made an awful lot of changes. Stephen Bradley didn't have to go as strong as he did. They're not really under too much pressure within the league. It's not like Derry are breathing down their necks. It's not like Bowes are. I know that has time to change, but generally I think Shamrock Rovers are just in neutral, just flying towards the end of the season and doing it really, really well and really strongly. And I think Baz, one question Stephen Bradley was asked was, is this the strongest ever League of Ireland team we've seen? I've initially said yes. Yeah. I think you've much more knowledge on the League of Ireland than me. Would you agree?
I think so. I think you just look at that squad last night. You've got Dylan Watts coming off the bench, like 45 caps in Europe or appearances in Europe. Graham Burke not even getting a game last night. Jack Byrne's only featuring in Europe at the moment. Like, you look at that squad, it's phenomenal. Even against Wexford, they're 1-0 up, and you look at the bench and they're bringing on four established players to go win the game 4-0 in the end. And you just look at Shamrock Rovers now, over the last couple of years, it's taken them years to get there. Lost a couple of players to England, Ferrugia, Darrow Burns, and they've gone and replaced them. arguably better players coming in now. You look at Danny Grant, has been so good. They've just snapped up the best players in the League of Ireland, and that's kind of been their the way they've gone about it. Kind of that Rosenberg model where they've gone, got the best players in that league to dominate that league and try and progress in Europe that way.
So we've heard so many times, like, a League of Ireland team will do a Rosenberg or do a Carabag or do a Shakhtar and become, like, you know, the one team that go really well in Continental. The thing is, because the Conference League now, and because, you know, it's a very good chance Rovers get to the group stages, very good chance they're champions next year and they're in the champions path, they can build a proper legacy over the next while, can't they? With, obviously, the 5 million in the bank from last season.
Yeah, and it's their coefficient as well. Like, you look at last night and you think, how have they got these draws? But it's built up over so many years. And listen, you just look back, they've had their troubles in Europe. They went to Ludogorets, got beaten 3-0. Ferencváros 6-0 on aggregate, 4-1 on aggregate, lost to Breiðablik of Iceland, and people are thinking the league is a terrible standard at that stage. It's only 2 or 3 years ago. So you look at what they've done. They've built up that nous in Europe, got players in who could play a system the way Stephen wants to play, and they've built it that way and got it slowly, got that coefficient up to a point now where they're getting these games early in Europe, and they're giving themselves, it obviously helped the draw that were taken out of the Conference League as well. They skipped around Shamrock Rovers, but you're going into these ties and you fancy them every time, and even now you're going up against Balkany now, the Kosovan champions as well, and they were in the group stage 2 years ago, 3 titles in a row, and you fancy Rovers against them. That's just where Rovers have got at the moment. And then you look at the draw is on Monday for the playoffs as well, and looking through some of those teams, you've obviously got Bromby, teams like that are coming in, but most of them you fancy Rovers to go and beat them.
It's not that long ago, and Keith Nairn was earlier on, where, like, you feared for the Irish teams in the early rounds of qualifiers.
Yeah.
Now maybe it is diluted a little bit because UEFA brought the Conference League, so we're now maybe facing off against teams who aren't quite as strong as it would have been when it was only two competitions. But now there is definitely that belief within League of Ireland teams that they can advance a few rounds here. We'll talk about Shells and Pats in a sec, but.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that now Shamrock Rovers are going to be playing another team that are out of season, so the way the season is lined at the moment, you're going through 3 rounds without facing anyone in season. And if you look at the difference probably last night with Pats and Cali, 21 games into their season, that fitness wasn't so much of an issue. But last night and the game over in St. Joseph, they just overran them completely, and I'd expect them to probably do the same against Balkany. They played a couple of friendly games, but that they played last night as well in Europe. But bar that, they had no real pre-season going into a game against like a really informed Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, you were watching the stream of Pats last night, Keith, and I kind of wonder, was this a case of the opposition that Pats had played because they couldn't buy a goal before the European run? Yeah. There were 6 or 7 kind of miserable results one after another. Stephen Kenny was saying, just, we need to get a spark for our season somewhat. Now, obviously, the Hagelman turned out to be not the strongest team. They beat Callu in, you know, dramatic circumstances last night, taking extra time, and then Mulroney's late goal as well. Is this a case of Pats have improved in the last month with Europe, or are we taking the opposition to account, a bit like the Lions were talking about them a few minutes ago?
Yeah, I think Stephen Kenny will be banging the drum that Pats are unbeaten in however many games now. They're starting to find a bit of form, but when you look at the performances, the Hagelman aren't a great team, to be honest with you. With 11 men on the pitch, I thought there's not an awful lot for St. Pat's to be afraid of. I read somewhere they two decent players, and if you're playing against two decent players out of 11, you should be happy enough in that scenario. The Caldew down to 9 men in the first leg, they only ended up winning the game 1-0, and even that one, when Conor Carty goes through and takes a shot, the keeper should be really holding that shot. Then Chris Forrester goes and makes it 1-0. You think there's a little bit of get out of jail there against 9 men. Then the second leg, you're thinking there's not an awful lot to be afraid of here. This Caldew aren't great. Caldew go 2-0 up within the game. The first goal was, in particular, was a really well-worked goal. Basic mistakes from a Pats point of view. But when they find themselves 2-0 down, you're thinking they're not coming back. They're out of Europe here. This is really, really poor. And you're thinking there's going to be questions asked about Stephen Kenny, who's sitting in a really poor position in the league, out of the European stuff, against a really poor team.
An FAI Cup run could happen. I mean, look, they hammered UCC in the last round, but, like, generally all the eggs are in the basket.
Are in that basket. Like, with that squad that St. Pat's have, the way they finished last season with the wingers, with Mason Melia, Aidan Keane, the players that they have, they should be scoring goals left, right and centre, and if they bring that little bit of defensive solidity, they should be up the right end of the table. For one reason or another, they're just wide open. In the League of Ireland in particular, Mulroney hasn't been at the races. Hopefully, he scored a goal last night that was just an overhit cross. I know people are trying to convince me he meant it. He didn't mean it. It was an overhit cross. But sometimes as a winger, you put a ball into a good area and it ends up in the back of the net. So use it to kick on, but don't be looking in the mirror after the game and telling yourself you were a 9 out of 10 today, because you weren't. Nobody in that St. Pat's team were. They were very, very poor over the two legs, I believe. I don't think the performances were in any way of a good standard, but to not play well and still beat a team in Europe is brilliant. And I am of the thinking any win in Europe for the League of Ireland team is a brilliant win. Shamrock Rovers probably have a little caveat on the side of that now, where we expect a little bit more from them. But Pats have won a game; they've got to the next round of the European tie. So good luck. But I really like it. Last season, people are saying Pats went into Europe and then they brought it into the League of Ireland and caught fire. They've won games in Europe, but I don't see it catching fire. The problems are still there. I just think the level of opposition have dropped down a bit and they haven't been punished anywhere near as much as they will be in the League of Ireland.
Why do you reckon, Barry, it hasn't happened for Pats this year? Because if we went back to the winter, I think a lot of pundits would probably have to delete their predictions for the season. Because we're loads saying, and it wasn't just because Pats had finished the season strongly. People looked at the squad, exactly like Keith was saying. It was like, there's firepower there up front. I know Mealy is going to go to Spurs, you know, at the end of the calendar year. But still there was that feeling, there's plenty of talent here for them to be in a title race. And it just really hasn't emerged at all.
Now, when you look at the last 9 games of last season, you think this is a great squad. They were all playing for essentially new contracts under new managers, and they were all right at it. Elbazetti, Mulroney, they were all right at it. Aidan Keane came in, first couple of games scoring goals. You're thinking this is going to be a decent team here, and it's just fallen off a cliff edge. Mulroney's been nowhere near it. You just look at some of his interviews, and he's talking about, I'm starting to catch fire now, I'm starting to feel good again. You're going, it's July, like what's happened to the first 4 months of the season? Like, and obviously Albazetti's picked up an injury the other night in the first leg, throwing his shoulder, so how long he's out for, like he's going to be a miss, but maybe not the way the season's going. Simon Powers come in, he's got good legs, but probably not added the goals that they wanted. Melia has been hot and cold, and you're going to get that at a kid that age. And you just look at, as Keith mentioned as well, at the back, Joe Redden's been nowhere near the player he was last season. Tom Gravosti's come in. You've had a couple of players, Turner's come in. They've had a couple of different back fours at certain points during the season as well. There's no real settled 11 there. And for Stephen, this window, you thought maybe they'd bring one or two in. They brought in a holding midfielder just to cover Jamie Lennon, but that's basically it. That's the squad he has, and it's about getting the tune out of that squad that he got last season. And you're looking at maybe some of the re-signs he made going, are they better on short-term contracts? Maybe you're going to get more out of them than offering these long-term deals. And that's what Stephen's been kind of over his tenure as Ireland manager and League of Ireland manager, that he's been a man's manager. He's been a player's manager that can put in a shoulder or an arm around the shoulder. And he's got to get a tune out of these players sooner rather than later, because you're looking at Europe now. If they're, like, you've got Beşiktaş, the prize for winning last night is Beşiktaş, so probably not going to get through that round, and not doing great in the league. So you're looking at maybe that FAI Cup, you've straight into your Europa League then. Is that the way the avenues are going to go? Because they're not going to get it through Europe.
It's a serious step up, Keith, isn't it? I mean, Beşiktaş were fourth in the Turkish league, where there's like a load of money going around at the moment, and big players coming in. So they've got Tammy Abraham as part of their squad at the moment. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be the manager at Richmond Park next week as well. But this is a big step up compared to the last two rounds, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is a big step up. That happens every round. It gets a little bit tougher, a little bit harder. The way they move the ball, the angles, the weight of pass will all go up a level. The understanding of each other's runs will go up a level. But look, sometimes, you know, Pats will go into that. It's about learning. I spoke about Shells against Karabag. People can be quite lazy and think, oh, we can't even beat the Azerbaijani champions. Karabag are a really, really good team. So they generally get to the group stage.
11 years in a row they've been in a group stage.
11 years in a row. So sometimes you can be lazy and think, oh, Azerbaijani, how good can they be? They're a very, very solid team. And Pats, again, with Beşiktaş, should be looking like, can we get some learnings out of the game? We probably aren't going to get through, but let's go and put up a fight. Let's go and represent the League of Ireland really well. But look, one thing I'd like to ask, Barry, I've seen an awful lot of St. Pat's this season. I'm still not convinced that this midway point in the season, just over midway point of the season, I'm not convinced Stephen Kenny knows his best team. No. I mean, I look at Forrester on the bench. If Sean Hoare is fit, he seems to play. Grigowski is in and out. The wingers, Simon Power's been in. Elbazetti, I know, has been playing. Mulroney's been playing with injuries. And they've lost McLennan. They've lost Elbazetti. Keane went off for an injury last night after coming off the bench. It just seems a little bit all over the place, and how he doesn't know his best team at this stage of the season is a little bit worrying.
Yeah, it is, and he doesn't know his best formation either. He's got Mealy in, and he's got Simon Power and Mulroney off him, or he's got Mealy and Keane in a couple of months ago, and that probably was their best patch, was that when the two boys were up front together. So you're looking at Mealy and you think you've got to play him because of the talent he is, and then Keane has got the goals. You look at what he did last season, he's got the goals. So you're thinking, I've got to kind of scram these lads into the team together, and it's just not working. And Forrester as well started off the season as the deeper role, and he's probably your most creative player in the midfield. You've got Keane Levy, he's got good legs there, but you've got to get service to him. Brandon Kavanagh's come in and out. So again, he doesn't really know his settled 11, and you've got to, it's July now, so you've got to know that 11. And like speaking to a couple of people around yesterday, just when, or over the weekend, when before the window closed, were they going to bring in anyone to replace El Bezzetti? They're happy enough with what's there and what Stephen has to work with. And I think, like, as a squad, it's probably up there with close enough to Shamrock Rovers and Derry. Derry brought in a lot of players in, but it's a really good squad to work from. So he's got to get a better tune out of them.
Yeah, it's true. And like, look, the other difficulty as well, Keith, when it comes to this, so Shamrock Rovers have dipped into the market. You know, they've obviously seen that they have to bring in a bit of depth with Europe coming around. As I mentioned, Derry brought some good players in. That's given them a bit of a kick. And similarly, it's like clever recruitment, I think, by Shelburne. They've obviously been doing a lot of scouting of guys who are coming back out of the system in England, but they want to bring in, you know, extra little bits of quality now for Joey O'Brien as well. If you're Pats, you're watching the teams above you all get stronger squads right now.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one in these transfer windows, because if you go across the water, all the players are out of season right now. They're only just starting to get up to speed in terms of their pre-season work. So you've got to recruit within the League of Ireland. You need somebody to hit the ground running. So you're looking around other clubs and thinking, is there somebody that's not playing that could go and do a job for me in Europe? It's a very high bar to be trying to bring players in. But you've got to be clever. You've got to unearth a diamond here or there, or bring somebody out of the academy who you feel might be able to do things. And With the injuries, I'm not sure how bad McClellan's injury is that went off last night, but Anto Breslin there, Solberg has started the season right back, Breslin started as a left back, now McClellan's a left back and McLaughlin is the right back. It just all seems a little bit mishmashy, and the best teams with the best results that I've played in, you generally know who's going to play. There might be one or two that get an injury or somebody's not feeling right and one or two change, but the spine of the team is generally there. And you're not sure. You're not sure, as I say, with Grigowski and Redmond, you're not sure who's going to start with Sean Hoare. Lennon in there, Bagley. I don't think you can play Bagley, Keane Levy and Forrester. You need somebody as well to help Jamie Lennon with the running. So I still think an awful lot of questions are still up in the air. I see progression with Pats, but it's also very easy to rubbish it and say, well, the opposition haven't been great, so I'm not so sure how much progression I am seeing. And I'm desperate to get them back into the League of Ireland, because the barometer is a little bit more real. You can say they should be beating that team. Cal Gio, you know, I'm not quite sure of the sample size, given the sample size, how good they are. But it's been underwhelming so far, and sitting where they are in the league, you know, they're looking over the shoulder rather than up.
So Shell's not ready to go to Iceland. This is again the joys of being the champion's path, as you drop down a couple of steps as you go through here. You kind of write off Carabao to a certain extent, don't you?
Yeah, as you said, 11 group stages in a row, 11 internationals as well. And you look at where Shamrock Rovers are in terms of their progression and their little nouse in Europe, and you look at like Carabao is the epitome of that, really. Like every year they're in it, adding funds to the coffers as well, but they're just quality. And as Keith said, like at that level, it's like the touch, the speed of thought, and like the football intelligence around the team. You can just see it, and you can, like, it was an interesting interview with JJ Lunny during the week about wanting to play teams like that every week because they get better as a player. And you're thinking, like, sometimes you're thinking you're playing a different game against these boys. They're just knocking around you, little triangles around you, and you think, like, I'm playing against good players every week, but this is just a level up. And they're out of season as well in Carabao, so like it kind of doesn't matter at that level if they're out of season, because they're such good quality players and look after themselves. So when you do get to that level, I think it's just another step up and probably too far for Shells and where they are in their evolution at the moment.
Yeah, Joey O'Brien was saying it's a case of maybe there's a bit too much respect maybe in the Talca game. At the same time, it was a bit of an eye-opener for his players, because he was saying until you get in that environment and you see how they're pinging the ball around, and particularly I think for their second goal, like, it's a lovely move. He was saying until you're actually in that, you don't know what it feels like.
No, but like the chances as well. Look at Gannon hit the post in the first 2 minutes. Like that goes in, it's a different ball game. Harry Wood, the two great chances. McEnroy put one over and he just swipes a swipe in the air.
That
goes in, you've got a great chance. And look at the goals they conceded. The second goal is a really well worked goal, but you're looking at Ledvich, he's not even watched following the runner, comes back off the post, does his job there like he does in the league and clears that. And then the second goal is obviously the new goalkeeper coming in, miscommunication between the two of them, and you're 3-0 down. Like you just can't make those mistakes in Europe. And if you're going into that second leg 1-0 down, like you've got a chance going over there. Who knows what happens going into a game over in Carabao, but you just can't kill yourself at that level.
Yeah. How do you see Sunday going, Keith? We'll get to our live game on the radio, which is Bowes and Drogheda tonight on News Talk as well. But for this game on Sunday, understandably, Rovers can have maybe half an eye in midweek, but at the same time, you'll get used to Sunday, Thursday if they're going to be successful for the next while. Do you think that they put Derry away? And at that point, it's 7 ahead of Bowes, depending on what happens tonight, 8 ahead of Derry at the moment. Could be a big step towards winning the title, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the message that will be getting relayed from Stephen Bradley. They've done really, really well in Europe, and now they're rolling into a huge game within the League of Ireland, and that will be the message. If you can go and beat Derry here, you really are sending out a message to the rest of the league that nobody can touch us. And you know, I look at the rest of the league and I think everybody's capable of beating everybody, but when the chips are down, Shamrock Rovers are just able to keep people away from them. And possibly Derry could even go and beat them in Tallaght. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Derry beat them, but it would surprise me if Derry go on a run and, you know, 6-7 wins and a bounce and really start putting some pressure on Shamrock Rovers. A once-off game, you know, Bowes have beaten Shamrock Rovers in every game this season, yet they're not top of the league. Because I see everybody at a certain level, but Shamrock Rovers just have that little bit of buffer, that just that bit better than everybody else. The strength, the squad strength is unbelievable. And on Sunday, I think that's the message that Stephen Bradley would be relaying. Go and stand on the throats of Derry and let everybody know that it's our title and we're taking it back to Tallaght.
Because like, I kind of appreciate what Tiernan Lynch said last weekend of the Bowes game, where he said these two games won't define our season and won't define the title race. But in a way, if you're not winning them, particularly where that was a game in hand when Rovers were idle at the same time as well, it just meant that they're kind of hands length away from them now.
Yeah, and that's what Rovers have always done well over the years, is that teams have got close and then they've gone and beaten that team. So like, for Derry, the problem isn't Shamrock Rovers. It's going away to Sligo and winning, getting that duck off your back. The Waterfords, the games that they're losing that they shouldn't lose. And it's the same over the last 4 or 5 years. When they've had the same problem doing that. They haven't gone and put real pressure on Shamrock Rovers when it comes to these games. But for Rovers, I think Derry have an awful record coming to Tallaght as well, so it doesn't look good for them. But Shamrock Rovers have got like the likes of Graham Burke coming back in. They've nearly have a European team versus a League of Ireland team. Like Jack Byrne will probably come out, Graham Burke will go back in. Got quality Dylan Watts will come back in as well. They've got quality all over the pitch to nearly put out 2 11s, and they're starting to put clean sheets together as well, which is looking ominous for everyone else really. And you go and get a result, you don't lose on Sunday, and I think it's a big step towards that title again.
I don't know how you guys felt, aside from the game itself, about what happened outside the ground last week, Barry, because listen to Garrett McGlynn. He was talking about it on the League of Ireland pod yesterday, and he was saying like it's a wider issue than football. He was saying a lot of guys here are like hooligans who go around to try and cause trouble outside the ground. He says it's been a problem outside the Brandywell now for a while. Vinny was saying that sometimes like he didn't feel particularly comfortable coming out, you know, that bit coming out to the bus where like it felt like it was intimidating outside. And there's good intimidating where like you've got rival fans and banter. There's other times you feel like you might get a brick thrown at the bus, and he always felt that that was a concern. I don't know. I mean, obviously, both clubs have condemned this. The PSNI have condemned what happened last week. You've got fireworks as well as the, you know, flashpoint of fans fighting with each other. It's not a nice image, is it?
No, and to me, it's a tiny amount of idiots who've just hijacked this ultras fan culture solely to fight and cause havoc. And it kind of overshadows what the good people in these groups are doing. And this is becoming a bigger thing in Ireland now, this ultras culture. And it's brilliant. You've got the flares, the fanfare around the games. But when people see this, they think it's a throwback to maybe England in the 80s and 90s, and oh, we can get involved in it, and it's an easy path to go and cause havoc and under the guise of a fan culture. But listen, this stuff has happened away from the stadium as well, so I don't know how much Derry can actually do around that part when they've gone off to the bog side just to cause havoc. And the problem is with the stadium in the Brandywell, we've been up there so many times, and you come out and your bus is smashed up. There's a graveyard right behind the stadium as well, and that road isn't policed at all. There's issues, obviously, and sensitive issues around having the PSNI around the ground. You've got internal security in the stadium. There's usually no problem kind of in the stadium. The problem is the flares are coming over the wall.
Yeah.
That's twice it happened. It happened to Shamrock Rovers last year. It's happened again this year. And it seems to be those Dublin teams that are kind of targeted. Like the Corks and the Waterfords go up there. There's no issues with these local youths coming. And the problem there was that a group of youths tried to get into the game earlier on, didn't get in, and weren't cleared off from around the grounds of the stadium. And I know it is hard, and you see a PSNI Land Rover up there, and it attracts a certain element as well, which is obviously historical issues there. But you've got a police that surrounding, you've got to make it a ring of steel around the ground so fans can be shipped in, go into the away ground, buses can go into the stadium without getting smashed up, and they come back out. Like it is an issue for home supporters as well, because they've got a brand new stand up there as well, and it's full. You're not going to have people coming and bringing their kids if that stuff is going on in the stadium. So it's really an issue that has to be solved.
And you know, like it affects the bottom line as well, Keith, because if away fans are turned off the idea of going, they're the lifeblood of also bringing a few quid in when you're hosting games.
And yeah, it's just not what we want for the league. You know, everybody's getting behind it. It's moving in the right direction. The football is getting better. The numbers in terms of people going to watch it are growing all the time. And when you read these little side things about the league, you're thinking, this is not what we need. You know, it's our league. We all want to go in the right direction. And as Baz says, it's a handful of idiots that just keep letting it down every now and then. Was it the start of the last season when all the pirate hectics were coming on and we had to keep stopping the games? That quickly got dampened out because people thought, this is not what we want for the League of Ireland. We don't want to be highlighting this sort of silly stuff. And that sort of stuff up in Derry is I'm all for having a hostile away ground and making it tough for people, but there's a line that you can't cross, and the line was definitely crossed on that day. So yeah, just a handful of idiots that, you know, it's taken away from the league, and it's not the highlights we want to be reading after a good weekend's football.
No, look, I don't think people who want to knock the league will take this as something that they
can use
almost a political football that they can use against it as well. When it comes to tonight then, Bowes Drogheda, I was just thinking, I really feel for what's happened to Drogheda here, Barry, because they've had so few games over the last 5 or 6 weeks. Kevin Doherty was talking about yesterday as well. It was difficult because they were preparing for a European campaign. Yeah. They played some of the teams that are in Europe that were some of the best teams in the league. Yeah. And next thing, they became idle by basically administration error more so than anything else.
Yeah, and you look at them, I know they were on a training camp in Spain as well, but it's not the same as going to Europe and playing football. And for most of those players, probably at a level where, are they going to play in Europe every season? Probably not. Like the FAI Cup win was fantastic last season. Off the back of that, you get European place and you're looking forward to that. And not only that, but I'm sure there was budgets within Drogheda that were extended because of that European run and the financial gain they were going to get from it. Players' contracts extended, a little added bonuses going on to it. So from a financial point of view, they're not getting that European money, and they've got suddenly these players that might be on a little bit of a higher income coming in. But as a player's point of view, and a manager for Kevin, you've got to be managing in Europe. That's the be all and end all for a manager in this league, is to go and test yourself in Europe. And for that to be taken away over administrative errors is horrendous. And it's poor from UEFA as well, the way the whole thing's been handled about certain email addresses and things you see now with Forest and Palace as well. So it's not just Drogheda. And it could have easily been said, right, this is the year we're making a transition. Can we turn it back, make sure everything is streamlined, people know what they're doing, and give people a little bit of leeway this season? And it obviously hasn't been done. But you've got to park that now. You've got a chance to go and get back into Europe this year again, whether it be through the Cup. They're up in Derry now. It's a tough one in the Cup, but you've got a chance to get the four places in the league as well, to get back into Europe that way. So it starts tonight.
Yeah, multi-club ownership is such a mess. And it's like a European-wide mess. But there's part of me that thinks it feels particularly unfair when you're in a summer season that finishes the year before. There's a change within the ownership structure which happens in the season where the competition starts in Europe, and you get punished for that. That to me seems a bit unfair.
Yeah, it is. But with these new ownership models, the multi-ownership models, it's a new thing to Ireland, but we're not seeing any sort of longevity with it in Ireland. Like, see owners down in Cork at the start of the season and gave the spiel about how they were going to put money in, and it's all about the local people getting everything in, and they're gone by July. And it's like Athlone have had it a couple of times, and you just see it, Dundalk, a couple of American owners, Peak Six and things. You're thinking, really, is this the way we want to go, to have these people involved with the clubs that...
every owner comes in. I've read so many of these statements in the last 2 years particularly, which is, new chapter for the club, investment, we're going to bring the best possible players in, long-term vision is always used as well, and it's very rare these owners stay around for more than 2 years.
I haven't seen any successful models of it in Ireland, really. Like, Dundalk were already on a good run when Peak Six came in. Like, they came off the back of that, and you're just looking at it going, like, with Drogheda, maybe you've got that connection with Walsall where you've got a couple of players going here and there, and Waterford with Fleetwood as well. But then any player that does well for Waterford is taken by Fleetwood straight out of the team. So what are they really gaining from this as well? And as you said, with the way the leagues are aligned, there's so many kind of caveats to where money is now that it just opens up all sorts of issues about hiding money and things like that. Like, with the European thing as well, they said we'll put it in the trust, we'll keep it away from the Drogheda side of things, and with the other teams they have money involved in as well. It makes things a little bit shady for my liking.
This question for both of you. Bulls need to win against Drogheda tonight if they're to keep any kind of pressure on, don't they?
They definitely have to win to keep pressure on. I think it doesn't really matter whether they win or not in terms of where the title will end up. I do think Douglas James Taylor will have a big part to play, obviously having gone from Drogheda to Bowes. He might get a couple of kicks up the backside from his old teammates. But look, to touch on what Barry's saying there, the struggles that Drogheda have gone through this season, to go and earn something on the pitch in terms of your European football and then that be taken away from you because of off the field stuff, it really is heartbreaking. And this is at every single level of football. People are desperate to play in European football. You look at Johan Vissa at Brentford. He wants to leave Brentford because he wants to play Champions League football with Newcastle, and he's basically said his reasoning is because I want to play in Europe. I might never get the chance to play in Europe again. And if Johan Vissa is feeling that at Brentford, you can imagine what those Drogheda players are feeling. So it's absolutely heartbreaking.
Bevan Kelleher, right, reminds me of, I don't know if you guys used to watch Fresh Prince once
before. Yeah.
There is a meme where at one point Will comes home and it basically there's nobody left. The entire family have left. Yeah. I feel like when Kelleher gets back from 6 weeks of holidays, there might be nobody left at Brentford at the end of this.
Yeah, possibly. But Keith has his first job as a manager for Mbeumo to be going out, Norgaard, Flecken, and possibly Vissa. I mean, the bones of that team is really starting to go.
Your two best attackers, your holding midfielder, yeah, and one of your most...
And the glue, Thomas Frank, that seemed to hold it all together, is gone as well. So, look, I've said it before, I think Keith needs to get the message out there to the Brentford fans that this isn't going to be a European race, this isn't going to be a top half finish, this is going to be survival for Brentford this season. And look, I still think the three that come up are ultimately going to be the three to go down, but I think Brentford might get an awful lot closer than people realise, and that may be a problem for Keith down the road.
So Barry, I think Cork are goosed. I'm happy enough to say now at this stage that's going to happen. Again, it's a complete mess where I think there might well be a fan protest tonight as well. Can Galway, given that Sligo are like in this crazy run of form, could they get sucked into second bottom yet?
Absolutely. The free fall they're in at the moment, the football they're playing, you just look at that game against Waterford last week. I've never seen a John Caulfield side concede the goals they conceded. You look at Pádraig Amin's first goal, Waterford's second goal, it's a ball over the top and it lands on the penalty spot, and the goalkeeper standing on his line, Evan Watts, and you're just thinking, I've never seen any sort of John Caulfield side concede goals like that. Greg Cunningham is probably falling off a cliff in terms of form at the moment, and you probably think, where's his head's at? I haven't signed up for a relegation battle, and I'm sure he's more professional than
you
that.
You lose your free scoring forward and next thing it's a big problem.
But that's it, he's been taken away. Hickey's not been involved the last couple of weeks, and you think of where the goal is going to come from. But the only kind of solace for them is, I don't think if they do finish second bottom, I don't think anyone in the first division can go and beat them in a playoff. But again, it's a one-off game, you don't know what can happen, and just the way Sligo are and the momentum they're starting to get at the moment, and the players that John Russell's brought in. You're talking about Stephen Kenny and bringing players in. The way John Russell has done it at Sligo has been brilliant. He's brought those periphery players in that are just on the periphery of other clubs, starting 11s. Good experience in the league, played a lot of games, and he's brought them in. They've hit the ground running. McManus has hit the ground running. Some really good players there, Hikiki as well. And you just think they're the team on form at the moment. So if there's any team going to pass each other, it's going to be Sligo and Galway, I think.
Yeah, and do you know what? A month or two ago, I would have never thought Galway would be in this scenario. We're talking about them in eighth place. I thought they were actually much more looking towards the top four than ending up in this position.
Yeah, but that's it. You've got to keep evolving. And if just the recruitment hasn't been right this year, they unearthed some gems, as John always did, with Hickey and Moses Dyer as well. And then you go and lose Moses Dyer in the window, and in kind of uncertain terms. It took 3 weeks for the deal to happen for him to go to Cambodia. You're thinking, who are they going to get in? They've not really replaced them. You can't take that sort of goals out of any league. It's such a low scoring league that you take 10 goals out of the team, it's a massive difference, and they haven't replaced them. And goals were a huge issue for them last season, only to keep the clean sheets. They were winning games 1-0 a lot of games last season, and for the clean sheets they wouldn't have had those points, so goals are again an issue for them.
Keith, satisfy Shifty Lad on YouTube here. Is Keith doing out a shopping list at the moment? So you have a legal pad there.
The best
pen of all time, the one with the multiple colours on it. So what are you writing?
All my different personalities in there, colours. Isn't that what it says in the ad? I'm looking at Galway have only scored 29 goals this season, and Moses Dyer is responsible for 10 of those. Yeah. Hickey is responsible for 4. Yeah. McCormick hasn't played the last couple of games, and Greg Cunningham's form has come off a cliff as well. So I think it's very easy to explain, well, that's why Galway are starting to slip down the league. It's just unfortunate that Sligo have clicked into gear and they look to be eating up the ground. Like Baz says, they won't want to hear this, Galway, but if they do end up in that relegation playoff, they do seem too strong for anybody in the first division. So there's no need to panic, but they are, like everybody else, looking over their shoulder down that bottom, thinking Sligo seem to have caught a bit of momentum all of a sudden.
There you are, shifty lad. It's not his plan for shopping after he comes out, and it's not screw you, Dan Bigger, which is written across the leader. These are all just vital stats.
I heart Ronan O'Gara. That's why I just kept scrolling down.
Dermot Keenan on the YouTube live comments as well. Rovers are just the most consistent team in the league, although they keep losing to Bowes. I wonder, is he a Bowes fan? They win the rest of the games, unlike Bowes and Derry. Look at Derry losing out to the likes of Sligo. And that is a fair point, Barry. That consistency over the course of a season will win you a league.
Yeah, it's something that Stephen Bradley has troped out season on season, is that they've levels, they get to the levels, they'll win games, and that they'll always say, judge us in October, judge us in November. And to be fair, it's always come good for them the last 4 or 5 years. And even you look at last season, how they were 10 points behind, probably more at one stage last season, and they lost it in the last 5 minutes up in the Brandywell. So he's probably right in what he's saying, that the squad is at a point where they're going and winning games, and it's just those games when teams get closest to them and they play that team, they always eventually win that game, and that kind of makes that gap bigger again. That seems to happen year on year for Sean Crowers.
Great to have you in again. Thanks for being popping in. Have a good long weekend as well. The live game tonight, Richie Towle is going to be on commentary with Stephen Doyle. So we got Bowes and Rada coming up this evening as well, and that is live on News Talk from 7 p.m. OTB Breakfast is with thanks to UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose them to help you get back in action.